League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It's the Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies recording a podcast. Hello, hello, hello.
You're welcome to the Two Johnnies Podcast, bringing you all the mayhem and news from the world of the Two Johnnies.
I'm Johnny V.
And I'm Johnny Smacks. Welcome to Podcast 136, coming to you from our hermitage, that is Two Johnnies HQ in Kerr, County Tipperary. On this week's podcast, we bring you an interview with a man that we've wanted to speak to for a long, long time. It involves drink, drugs and prison. More on that later.
He doesn't believe in multivitamins because his neighbour took one once and died the next day. Fact. It should be pointed out that the neighbour died after being hit by a bus, but that won't stop Noel Furlong because he's here with the news.
She's live in studio, so she can look us in the eye when she's ripping the piss out of us. Maureen is here with her mystery topic.
Oh shit. And as traditional as people commenting on how huge our tour manager James is, 6'5", ladies, we round off the podcast with our Yurts and Dirts of the Week.
Before commencing with proceedings, though, matters arising from last week's podcast.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, on last week's topic of nightclubs. Anonymous said, I worked on the door of a nightclub, and one night a girl approached walking like John Wayne. She was clattering as she came down the street. She had two bottles of vodka sellotaped to the inside of her legs, not even the outside of her legs. I had the horrible job of untaping her. As well as losing her drink, she also got a free waxing.
Whey.
But I never laughed so much. I'm in my late 40s and work on the door. Funny how many guys chat up door staff, thinking it will get them in for free. It doesn't work, considering I am old enough to be their mother. Do they actually think it would work? Also had to deal with a mother who came in giving out one night because security wouldn't let her son in. Spoiler alert, he was underage.
That's a common thing.
What?
Parents were in it. Yeah, I remember growing up, like, parents would go up to the door and be like, leave him in. And he's only 17. It's like, leave him in. I know he's in here. Leave him in. So, like, parents kind of think, it doesn't matter. Once I know he's here, that's the only rule that matters. Never mind age.
I'll stand up in court when they try to take away your license. Yeah. So, Your Honour, sure, at least I knew where he was.
Also, chatting up bouncers is a big thing. I spoke to a cousin of mine who was a doorman.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, he was... added like a rabbit, he said.
More
during
rings.
Work.
He more said it, rings than Sonic the Hedgehog.
Lad, he said there was a scrap outside one time and there was just radio on him. Where are you? Where are you? He was flat out.
On the jacks.
Yeah.
Bad. My man.
It's bad, no? Bad. Gavin said there used to be a gay bar in Limerick called Strokers and I believe another gay club in Limerick called Milk. Yes, you read both of them right. Gavin, thank you for that. That's a good name, in fairness.
Another listener told us there's a gay bar in San Francisco called Rawhide.
Nice.
Wow. And graphic. Shit.
Can we just quickly mention that the GA club in San Fran, remember, they told us they would bring over lads from the country and tip like and they give them a house and then they get a job and they go hurling. Mm. And they put them down in the...
Castro.
Yes, the Castro's,
like the gay area of San Francisco. And so the boys found there's like a pub next door. Sure, after a couple of pints, all the Irish lads had their tops off, up on the tables, dancing, singing Mr. Brightside. She said they're all the local gay lads, didn't know what was going on. They thought it was great.
They're loving it.
Loving it. Anyway, Anonymous said, I worked in Mojo's nightclub for 4 years in Mullingar, which is owned by Joe Dolan's nephew, Colin. He also owns other plenty Dublin night spots, P-Max, Blackbird, no way. And they finish every night in Mullingar with the national anthem.
Ah, that's good to know. Mullingar is a bit of culture, right? They keep that tradition alive.
They also have a singer called Count Tornado. He wears, he kind of dresses like Dracula and sings his own songs, and he plays in the nightclub in Mullingar. So YouTube that, anybody who wants to be scarred for life.
But also, why aren't these nightclubs in Mullingar finishing with Joe Dolan? I sincerely hope he's the second last song.
Yes.
Louise was in touch. Howdy, lads and Mara. On the nostalgia about nightclubs and various acts coming in, we were told S Club 7 were coming to the nightclub in Naas. Turns out it was just Bradley and Joe. I got a picture with Bradley, but Joe wouldn't let anyone take pictures with her and left straight after the performance. Rumour has it she went to Coppers. S Club 2. Don't have the same ring to it.
Connor said, on nightclubs and the phenomenon of booking acts who are past their best, I just finished college in UCC, and in first year me and a group went to see Bass Hunter in Cypress Avenue, Cork. He was good now, in fairness, but he only played for an hour and was necking bottles on stage for the whole hour. The lad was smashed and just kept burping down the mic. Gas man, in fairness. On Bass Hunter.
It was brilliant that he just said he was class, to be fair to him. Like, you know, or drinking and burping. Jesus, I might become a DJ. Rachel said, Club Bed in Skibbereen. There was a competition to propose a name for it, and some bright spark came up with Before Every Dawn, which was then abbreviated to Bed. The club itself was on the first floor and it had a pub underneath. So the commonly asked question became, will you come to bed with me? Awful, awful stuff, she says. Thanks, Rachel.
There was another club in Mullingar called Bed, and for a while they had an actual bed on the dance floor.
Oh, man. The nightclub in Pure Mule is Red. I wonder what that stands for. Really bad accent.
Riding every dawn.
Yeah.
John O'Shea was in touch. Couple of nightclub stories. First one, the other Club G, Grant's in Cashel, County Tip. Mm-hmm. A shame it's gone. I remember one night about 10 years ago, the place was rammed. One of the boys brought out a slither. It all started very civilised in the pub beforehand. Just the odd hand pass. Once we got to Grant's, it was championship hurling. The ball was thrown in. Lads contesting high balls on the dance floor. Breaking ball. Elbows everywhere. Randomers getting stuck in. It was chaos, but great crack. Bouncers didn't know what was going on. This went on for the whole night. You'd be at the bar or on the dance floor. The dance floor.
There's murder on the dance floor.
I was on the dance floor with my slither. And all of a sudden, some lad would appear and the ball would be fired across the room. The ball made it home in one piece. However, we didn't. There was bruises galore. Ideal pre-season training. Second one is about Coppers. Or as one of the boys declared to my mother, a place where you won't find love, but you could at least sample it. We were downstairs one night on the dance floor. It was rammed. Well, all of a sudden, it cleared. People parted like the Red Sea. In the clearing, there was a young one in one of those blue, those big blue bottle bins being fired around the dance floor. Bouncers let her have the fun for a while before taking her out of the bin. Irish nightclubs are great. You wouldn't get away with anything like that here in the UK. I got asked to leave a nightclub after I wrote the signature of a famous Tipperary hurler on the wall.
That better have been Pat Fox.
I said to him, was it Fox or Hayes? And he just said, Han and a Carty.
Office romance.
Oh, just want, can I get one or two more on
yes.
Club Mecca that you went to?
Yeah.
Before that, it was Maximus. Before that, it was Easy Street. And before that, the nightclub in Nina was called Henry Africa's.
Wow.
Shocking names all around. Also, The Bush in Enniskillen. SG-1 in Fermoy, named Jesus. After a spaceship from Stargate. And also there was another one in Fermoy called Banter.
Of course there was.
And our own Lauren Guilfoyle called us out saying that there is tables and coppers. But that is, of course, in the VIP where Lauren would be hanging out.
Yeah, frequenting a lot. And we had some banter over and back on Twitter. And we don't know if she's still talking to us. But Lauren, if you are, do make contact with us.
We're men of the people downstairs, Maura. You know the crap.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, upstairs. Although we have been there on occasion. Office romances. Well, lads and Maura, I have never emailed you before. But after hearing about Maura's story in a particular workplace, I couldn't resist contacting you. As I may have worked in the offices too. It kind of goes without saying, please keep me anonymous. However, I do worry that many of my friends listen to you and will recognise this story. Fresh out of college, I was the quiet new girl in the office in September, but this was to change when the Christmas party arrived. Oh, this sounds good. This sounds good. I was working in a small office with slightly older folks and was eager to make friends with the younger people in the nearby office. I had my eye on a particular lad. He was in the office near mine and I had to walk through this office every day to go home. There was never much flirting or anything, just general shite small talk. It all happened at the dreaded Christmas party, which is always absolutely wild. There was a free bar, and let's just say one of the last things I remember was ordering a vodka cranberry for one hand and a pint of Guinness for the other.
Nice. Well,
you're going to have some shit the next day. You can see where this was going to end. And I couldn't, as I could barely stand. We left the hotel near the docks and apparently coppers was on the cards. However, this was not before the taxi had to stop so I could puke. Anyway, fast forward a few hours, I wake up with a bang in my landlady's room. I'd just fallen out of her bed and bashed my head on the locker. No, she was not in the bed beside me. It was the IT guy. This guy was not who I had the hots for. However, he was at the desk beside the other lad at work.
Oh!
I nearly died from the fright and the hangover. Struggling to process the whole thing, I contacted a friend. Turns out, I lobbed a gob on the guy I did like on the dance floor of the function room in front of all my colleagues. Then leapt on the other lad in coppers and ended up in legs. Don't know what that is. I remember very little from the act.
The late night bar.
Okay. Yeah. I remember very little from the act, and to be honest, I am not even sure we had sex, but I think his Mickey was skinny and long. Like an index finger. But I was drunk, so God knows what I was looking at. Monday morning, word creeped round the office of my antics. I had to walk by the two guys until I left 8 months later. It was terrible. I even tried to ask the guy I actually fancied out, but I had clearly burnt that bridge, as he said no. Even the day I was finishing work, my boss slagged me in a speech about the Christmas party. I still cringe at the thoughts of what happened. Just beware of those bloody parties. Maura, they said they worked in a similar office to you. And you worked in News Talk. Is this Marconi House?
Could be. It could be the Farmers Journal.
Okay. Yeah. So who else shares that building? News Talk, Today FM?
Well, no, the Farmers Journal, there's FBD in that. So I know there's a couple of IT guys as well, and there's open plan offices. So, like, the Farmers Journal would take in a lot of young interns, you know, so.
I was getting really excited there for a minute. I thought we'd uncover something fantastic in Marconi House. No.
It could be News Talk as well, but I would have a feeling it's the Farmers Journal. I know the last Christmas party I was at in the Farmers Journal was in the Gibson. Down beside the Tree Arena, and that crowd would go to coppers, you know.
Okay, so, yeah. I'm upset that anybody working in the Farmers Journal is ordering a cranberry and vodka.
Okay, Terry was in touch. Bit of a running theme here. He said, "Hi, Johnny's and Mara. So me and the woman decided to head off on a bit of a staycation around Ireland. The usual stuff. Few stops. We ended up in Killarney. Everything was going great. The weather was class, but the sex was better, as both of us..."
What are you, a primary school teacher? You can say sex. S-E-X. Oh no, the listeners of the podcast won't be able to... What if one of them's dyslexic, lad?
Don't be a B-I-T-C-H. "As we both come from strict enough families, we're staying the night in each other's house is unheard of. It was safe to say there was a fair bit of it going on. Morning, noon and night sort of job. After doing all the normal touristy shite around Dingle, seeing a dolphin and all that, we came back to the hotel around 6 that evening, giving the girlfriend enough time to get ready as dinner was booked for 8, and also giving me a chance to watch the first half of Real Madrid versus City. So back to the hotel we go. I flick on the football. The girlfriend sorting out the outfit turns to me, 'I'm away to have a shower here.' 'Right, go on ahead,' I replied. She walked on, then turned round and said, 'Are you going to shower?' And without taking my eyes off the football, I said, 'I probably will.' Again, she walks on back and turned to me saying, 'Are you joining me?' I couldn't get up quick enough, like a shot, and straight into the shower we went. The hotel shower wasn't just a straightforward shower. It was a bath, shower head and shower curtain. Regardless, we got straight to it, just like rabbits. A good half an hour had passed, and we were still at it." And he's going to miss the match.
Christ almighty.
He's going to miss the match.
I miss half time at this stage.
"It was going great, just until we realised that the water wasn't going into the bath. but onto the shower curtain that was hanging to the outside of the bath. I immediately threw the girlfriend off me. Jeez, you're some man. We're ripping back the shower curtain, putting a foot out of the bath, and a good feckin' inch of water on the ground. The bathroom was absolutely flooded. There's still not the worst part. I opened the bathroom door and the water had already leaked out onto the carpet in the hotel room. It was like a swimming pool. Panic central. The next half hour consisted of the girlfriend on the ground trying to gather the water in a glass and using towels and throwing it back into the bath. I was using all the towels to try soak up the water from the carpet, trying to stop it from soaking out onto the carpet in the hotel hallway. Both of us completely naked. We thought we had made a right job of getting the place dried up. With the feed still booked for 8 and me absolutely starving, I was not going to miss it. So the girlfriend went and got more towels from reception. We got dried, she got ready, and off we went, leaving the hairdryer on to try and dry it a bit more.
What? Oh, the hairdryer.
You can just leave it on.
Yeah, probably on an area, like, you know, to
you're going on fire.
True. True.
Don't do that.
They are dangerous.
We made the restaurant for just after 8 and ordered the feed, all going well, laughing away at the fact that we had flooded the hotel bathroom, having had brilliant shower sex and got away with it.
S-E-X.
S-E-X. And as soon as the starters were down in front of us, I received a phone call from an unknown number, Killarney, Ireland. Well, didn't my heart effing drop? I just had to leave the restaurant and take a call. Hello, mister. I am calling from hotel. Would it be possible for us to gain access to your room, as the ceiling from the room below has just fallen through and we think there could be a pipe burst?
Oh, no.
I stuttered some bullshit story that we had fallen asleep after running a bath for my girlfriend, but I could tell from the tone of the woman's voice, she knew exactly what had happened. S-E-X. The two of us were completely dreading going back to the hotel to see who or what was waiting for us. We got back, slipped past reception, and up to the room we went. They must have run a Hoover over the carpet, and that was it. The relief was class. That the room was grand. No signs of flooding or anything. Just a damp carpet. The next morning, about 20 minutes before checkout, the hotel phone rang. My heart fucking dropped. It was the manager wanting to talk to us when we were checking out to pay a bill of 400 euro. Aww. Most expensive ride of my life. Those shower curtains, you got to watch them.
Yeah.
Sometimes they stick to the outside of the bath.
I know.
Would you be doing the SCX in the bath?
Just in general, sometimes. Sometimes they stick to the outside of the bath.
Okay, I'll bear that in mind. John and Carlo was in touch. Lads and Mara, I was reminiscing about life before COVID recently, and I remembered a good story about one of my first ever nights out in Kilkenny City. My childhood friend Kieran is a couple of years older than me, so when I was just after finishing my Leaving Cert, he'd moved out from home and was now living and working in Kilkenny. Up until school finished, my nights out were in rural pubs for someone's 18th, and mainly just had young people from school out. Anyway, Kieran always would try to get me to come out to Kilkenny with him, and I'd put it off until one night I had to go. I'd run out of excuses to cover my nerves of going out in the big city. He collects me one Saturday afternoon and we head to his house. After a look around town and a quick stop into River Island, we headed home, got food, got ready, started pre-drinking. I'd a Nagging a Smirnoff and my blackcurrant mixer. After one or two, the nerves were gone and I was ready to take on the city. Anyways, we head out and get into Langton's, which is a popular nightclub in Kilkenny. I won't lie, I was 18 and it's 21s, but puberty hit me hard and had a substantial bit of facial hair to pass. We had a good time. Drinks were going down and we chatted about when we were kids growing up. Comes to the end of the night and these two women, who for some reason were outside the lads' jacks, approach us. We were talking and they asked us back to the room. They were staying in the hotel part of the nightclub. Grand, says us. And after about 15 minutes of walking around, one of the girls realised that they are in fact staying in a similarly named establishment. But it was in fact a hostel and not a hotel.
Oh.
We walked down the road to this hostel, and when we get into the room, all I could see was a plain wall with about 12 sets of bunk beds lined across each wall and one jacks. The room was full with a mix of young lads and young ones all staying in the room. And after 5 minutes, one of the girls with us showed us each a bunk bed, and the lights were turned off for bed. I felt so awkward and my anxiety was through the roof. I text my friend who was on the bunk bed beside me and asked him what's the story. We're hardly staying here. I could tell he was up to something, but he told me we would stay until 3:30 and if nothing happens, we leave. And just for the crack, we'll rob the blankets and pillows too. Random, but I say yeah and patiently waited the 30 minutes or so, excited to leave. At exactly 3:29, because I was watching, one of the girls with us just appears in my eyeline. And all I can hear is my friend ask her, "Are you coming up?" To which she agrees. I text him straight away, saying, "You fucking dickhead," and proceeded to text in anger that I had to stay. With the sound of them riding beside me, I try and turn to sleep, but I'm 6'3" and this is a small bunk bed. I've got no blanket and I'm in my jeans and shirt. Just as I'm about to sleep, two people in bed directly below me start riding too. I didn't sleep a wink because once one starts, more follow. And it was 8 a.m. by the time we left. We had to walk across town in the freezing cold and were hungover. Stopped into a shop and I had a chicken roll and Lucozade to help the head and the soul after that night. The deli worker looked at me and said, "Rough night," and laughs, and I reply saying, "Asher, it was what it is." To this day, when I go back out with my friend, I make him swear that no hostels are going to be part of the plan. It was a nightmare, but I had some crack coming back and telling all the boys about it. All the same.
Where's the one he was talking to?
I don't know.
Where did she go?
This hasn't ended well for him. Like, I thought he was going to say, "Me and me mate Kieran went back and we went to town."
Gave an exhibition.
We gave absolutely World Cup stuff.
Maybe he didn't feel comfortable getting on in the bunk bed, you know?
Well, sure, everyone else says you can't bait him, join him, Maureen, you know? If you can't bait him, join him. Now, let's get down to the real stuff.
Hashtag save our chicken rolls. Jim was in touch, lads. Jim here, 23 from Limerick, and I'm working with an Irish company in Holland on a Microsoft site. Just started listening to you recently. A boy, Jim boy, noticed your chicken roll debate. Well, here's one for you. Our canteen in work, a scabby chicken fillet roll, is a whopping €6.95 for plain chicken, lettuce, mayo and more for anything else. And it's served by an even scabbier old one. Makes me sick seeing it. Missing my dear old chicken rolls back home.
Outrageous! Neve said, with regards to the chicken roll campaign, 40 dirhams here in Abu Dhabi for a chicken roll. That's about €10 in Irish money at home.
Do you know what that is at home?
Outrageous!
And Mr. Anonymous emailed saying, "Thought I'd let you know that Super Value in Tip Town are doing €4 chicken rolls and he got ham, eggs, lettuce, and mayo."
What kind of madness is getting egg on a chicken fillet roll? No, that's not. Are we all in agreement? Even Neil's nodding over there.
But chickens lay eggs.
Nah, man, that's not egg on a chicken roll. Sorry, no.
Outrageous, is it?
I'll tell you what egg on a chicken roll is. Outrageous. Anyway, it was €4.
No wonder he kept his name anonymous.
Yeah,
sir.
Come on, Mr. Anonymous, you sicko.
Okay, who is getting the mug? Mara, who'd you like for the mug?
I like the Office Romance Girl. Yeah. No shame. Yeah. Pleasure.
I'm going to go for that too. And if you work in the Farmer's Journal, we'll send the mug faster. Just let us know. You know, if you got off with an employee from somewhere else, do let us know. Yes, Xmas Party Girl, you're winning this week's Two Johnnies podcast mug sponsored by KC Sports, who sell all of our Two Johnnies lovely merchandise. You can see kcsports.ie and twojohnnies.ie for more info. Now, the weekly roundup. What's been going on in Two Johnnies land?
What's going on, boy? Episode 3 of our TV show, Two Johnnies Do America, was out to rave reviews.
Yeah.
I imagine. I haven't read them.
We haven't. We don't do reviews. Somebody reviewed it on the Times.
Go away.
Yeah. The UK Times. And it's a subscription base, so they can go fuck themselves. I'm not paying up to listen. I imagine it was crap because they're not exactly our clientele.
You never know that.
No.
The Irish Examiner gave it a good review.
And the Examiner.
The Irish Times. Yeah, it was.
Scandal. It was bad. It was bad. Yeah, don't sugarcoat it, Mara.
Did the Times cut the back off us, did they?
No, they didn't cut the back off you. They just... I think they only watched the first episode. And the first episode doesn't see you fully out of your comfort zone. Like, they didn't see you...
Lazy journalism, Mara. Yeah. We all know that's what it is. It's lazy journalism. I can't think of what your man's name is off the top of my head now, but I'd box the jaws off him if I ever catch him.
Whoever he is.
Whoever he is. I wouldn't pay... Would you know what? I'm so unworried by your review, I wouldn't pay the €5 to sign up to see it.
review it to me face.
Yeah, review it. That's what I want, some fella. Review it straight to me puss. Hush, hush. Sort them out. Step out. For bats. But episode 3, man, though, it's getting good ratings you, and good reviews.
You looked very comfortable in women's clothes and high heels, John.
A lot of people ask me, was it my first time in heels? And it was. But I've been around enough women.
Mark, he looked very comfortable in heels.
He's really good. You, on the other hand, look like a drunk foal in heels.
That's fine. That's fine.
Do you know what they said to Johnny? Like, they were like, oh, you've got prawn toes. So like, they're calling shrimp toes. So like,
alien toes.
His little toes were like prawns. And I don't know why, but like, the shoes were his shoe size, right? And his toes still managed to come out the front of the shoes and like scrape the floor. It was almost unnerving watching him in him. Like,
it was like a mop too big for the buckets.
But I enjoyed episode 3. It was gas. We went kind of art seeing. Is that a thing? We went to an art gallery. Pete Tunney was there. We looked like Donald Trump.
We did art.
Yeah, he's actually Johnny's real father.
No, he's not. He's a hero though. Can I just say, I told you I met a celebrity this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Former Irish rugby player Tommy Bow. And as anyone listening to the podcast last week will know, I was a little hoarse. So I was in town and I was trying to mind my voice. And then when I saw him across the street, I couldn't help myself but scream, "It must be! It has to be! Tommy Bow!" And then he was walking past us and I was talking to someone else and they were like, "Hey, Tommy, do you know the two Johnnies?" And he's like, "Oh, I do, yeah, of course." And he's like, "Oh my God, it's you." Tommy Bow then copped me. And he's like, "I thought it was just some lunatic in a Munster jersey." So I happened to be wearing a Munster jersey, abusing Tommy Bow across the street. But he seems cool. Yeah. I think we're friends now. Just going to hang out with Tommy Bow someday. You're not around.
You took a selfie of you and Tommy Bow, and I was kind of like, "Ah, come on, Johnny."
He asked for it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
he did. Yeah,
on your social media, didn't
he? He was like, "Tweet me that," and then I was like, I just couldn't find him on Twitter.
So tweet me that. Is that what you mates say to each other now? Is it? I'm going to get replaced by a better looking, more chiseled version of myself.
Yeah, me and Tebow gonna hang out later.
Is that what you're calling him now?
That's me and all the guys calling. Yeah. He looks in great shape, but he's definitely down, I'd say, about a stone, two stones since he was playing. Like.
Do you reckon?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's way leaner.
He looks beautiful, though.
Oh, yeah. He's
Johnny came out to the house and was like, "Met Tommy Bow in town."
Yeah.
Lad, he's very good looking.
Yeah.
But we have some sad news.
Yeah, sad news is coming, John.
Sad news. Mm-hmm. There's only one episode left.
Yeah. The Two Johnnies Do America finishes on RT2 this Thursday at September 24th at 9:30. It's the final episode.
We will have done America.
Do you know what, lad? We'll have technically done it. We will be back for a second series, hopefully. But
how was that for you, America? It's pretty good for us.
Was that? Yeah, at the moment
we will never call you.
We're smoking cigars in bed after doing America at present. No, it's going to be mad because like Thursdays have been a mad day for us in the last 3 weeks. Because we obviously watch it and then we do the Facebook Lives, and it's exhausting watching yourself, and particularly watch. Yeah, drag artist trying to put a corset on a man who, honest to God, was not built for corsets. And like Annie was like, "That's not where a corset's supposed to sit." I said, "Listen, give a man a chance. You know what I mean? I'm trying my best here. I'm poured into this dress." And I thought, like, when we done rock paper scissors, see who does it. And I was like, we'll probably end up having to let Johnny B do it. Like, they will not have a dress that'll go around me, like. But we got there in the end. Emotional times.
Well, thank you to everybody who's been tuning in. We really appreciate it. And also thank you so much to everybody who signed up for the Extra podcast. It's out on Thursdays. Extra crack, extra mayhem and stories. And it's straight from the heart.
Yeah.
To your ears. And this week on Round the Town, we introduced care resident, the legend that is our local gravedigger and former bouncer, Jimmy Luby. And he gave us his old school views on the game of soccer.
If we hadn't done BTG, what would we have?
Yeah.
But jeez, we wouldn't have that. So it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, the soccer. Oh, jeez, that's on top
of that. Why?
I'm off. I'm sorry I even mentioned.
Why? I go on.
I often told the story. I tell the only game, I suppose, and I like a bit of sports, you can play with your hands in your pocket. You don't need them. You don't need gloves. So you can't be touched the ball. What you want gloves. And I remember one night I was at home and I remember saying to Francis, "Look, I go to town for a pint and no soccer match on." I couldn't be looking. Jesus, I went into Kendricks and I had a pint and then I had another one. So then I went down across to a town and I had no score and got going. Jesus, she would have done that. When I went home, I had a bag of chips as well. And I got home, no score either. Oh, Jesus, I nearly broke the fucking television.
You like, never watch soccer again.
I couldn't figure this out at all. Like, if you're celebrating, you have to have a cup, wouldn't you? Whether you, whatever, look, it vexes me. I just get pure vexed when I see the soccer and see him lying down on the ground. I'd be half thinking when I see him. And the one other thing that vexes me at the soccer, if someone takes a shot at goal and it's wide, it's that clap. Oh, just like a fucking...
Our guest this week is about to embark on a PhD at University College Cork. He also has a degree in community work and a master's in criminology, for which he was awarded first class honours. He works for Cork Education and Training Board and is married to Gillian. However, less than a decade ago, his life was very different. We saw him on the Tommy Tiernan show earlier this year and I thought, we just have to talk to this guy. Welcome to the Two Johnnies podcast, James Leonard.
Thanks for having me.
I suppose, I don't know if we could do you justice. Do you want to introduce yourself? Because we saw you on the telly on the Tommy Tiernan show earlier this year and it really struck a chord. We were like, who is this lad? What a story. So would you give us your own story from the start?
I will, yeah. I was on the Tommy Tiernan show. I was asked to go on that in 2018, but my story is around addiction and stuff like that, you know. So I declined it. Because it's not easy to go on a big TV show like that and talk about my story. It also involves my family story, my community, you know. So I said, do you know what, thanks, but no thanks. And in the meantime then, I was after doing my master's in criminology and I got married. So then they asked me to come on again in 2019 and I... ask some friends and family what you think, and they said, look, go for it, you know, what's the worst that can happen? So I said, grand. So that's how I went down. But it was basically they wanted me to go and talk about my experience of addiction and prison and recovery and stuff like that. So that was the context that I went down. I was afraid of my life going on. I didn't know what Tommy's experience was with drug users. Yeah, was he ever mugged or is his gaff robbed? Is he going to take it out on me here? Or?
So, people can probably tell you're from Cork.
I'm from Cork, Northside, yeah.
Knocknaheeny.
Yes.
That's where Young Offenders is set, is it?
That's right, yeah.
Are they accurate?
No.
No.
We don't have haircuts like that. No. Almost, though. Maybe 2 inches higher.
Did you ever wear white socks over your tracksuit?
Never, but some do.
Some do.
Not in my generation, we didn't know.
Are those lads to be avoided?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. If they're looking for a fag or €2, just...
keep going.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you grew up in Knocknaheeny, be a tough neighbourhood.
Yeah.
And so at what age did you first start getting in trouble or getting involved in drugs?
When I was growing up, Knocknaheeny is... when it's all you know, it's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, Knocknaheeny, there's a stigma attached to it because it's seen as... has a stereotype of joyriders and drugs and all. And you know, in every stereotype there's truth, there's straight about it. But when you're growing up in there, it's all you know, so it's nothing to us, you know. And I remember if we were going playing football matches, no GA, hurling, soccer, whatever, in other communities, you know, you get the height of abuse, like. But they were afraid of us, but we're just the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just from a council area or whatever. But it does have a lot of antisocial behaviour and drug use. And I suppose I was attracted to the negativity of that, you know. I suppose issues going on in my own life. I was looking for a way to escape. And as well as that, the people in the area who had status and were respected were drug dealers, joyriders, doing donuts and handbrakers on the back road. It was a spectacle.
Yeah.
And it was like everybody used to be going cheering them on. That was the way it was. So it was like, fuck it, you know what? When I'm old enough, I want to do that too. So that was the way it was, yeah.
It was a thing of like, I see them doing it and like people love them lads. I want to be just like them. Is it kind of like that?
It was the same thing. But then like you could have another group of lads that are going to the local GA club of St. Vincent's and them lads have status too and they're playing in Parky Keeve and winning trophies and stuff like that. It's just certain groups of us was attracted to the negativity and certain groups of us was attracted to the positive role models. And I suppose a lot of the lads that was attracted to the negativity probably come from homes maybe where the parents might have struggled a little bit, you know. I know I was a middle child and, you know, when my father went to prison, my mother found it hard to deal with us. I became very challenging at home and in school. School was, secondary school especially, was bad for me. And you know, there was just a lot of conflict for me, and I just kind of hanging around in the streets then, and a lot of the lads coming from difficult backgrounds there too, and we just kind of had comfort in each other, and we started drinking, taking drugs, and it kind of got carried away then.
What age did you take your first drug?
I'd say 13 I started using Tippex and solvents and
What are you doing with the Tippex?
Sniffing it.
You mad bastard.
And petrol and, you know.
Sniffing petrol?
Yeah.
Yeah. Links. I remember lads where I'm from in Roscrea, like that was like sometimes you'd be coming home from a soccer match, lads be inhaling.
Best smell in Britain.
Yeah, I swear to God, boy. I was like, Jesus, that Links Africa. Who's spraying that on themselves? I was innocent enough in that. Like the boys be down the back of the bus, and I was like, fucking Jesus, that's a lot of Links they're using. Like
he must have a date.
Yeah, the boys be fucked in like getting off the bus, and that's that was young as well. Like.
Yeah, but like when you're a child like that, you don't have access to illegal drugs or hard drugs, so you're just kind of experimenting. But it's not a good sign when you're that age and you're looking to get over your head. You know, like we were looking at it. Oh, it's a buzz, it's a buzz. But looking back now, wasn't a buzz. We were trying to escape from our mental health at times or our social situations or whatever. You know.
And where does it go from there?
It went straight into alcohol, 14, 15, ecstasy, hash, them kind of, you know, you'd often hear the same stories, you know what I mean? Hash and alcohol, then it moves on to ecstasy. Once I finished school, 17, then I kind of left home. Started staying with my brothers and friends and girls and just party, drinking every day, taking ease every day.
Go ahead. Are you working at this stage now?
I was doing a bit of painting. I was doing an apprenticeship painter in times of the boom now. So 2003, I went through every painting contract in Cork.
You could quit a job on a Friday, start new on Monday.
Yeah, even if you got fired on a Monday morning, you'll be on a new site Monday evening.
I'd say you were painting some stuff, lad, if you were taking Yorks every day.
Yeah, exactly. But even with the Yorks was the weekend, you know. Okay. But when I wasn't working, then it was during the week. But it was the weekend, really, for the Yorks. The drinking then would have been every evening. But what really kind of caused me damage was when I started taking prescription drugs like Xanax and Rohypnol and Valium and stuff like that.
Just a cutting in, begun to fucked in. Like
I was falling asleep on the job, and that was common.
Yeah, why Rohypnol? Does that just knock you out?
No.
Would you buzz away on it like her?
My dad used to say to me, "You're the only man in Cork to take 10 sleeping tablets when he wakes up." Wake up and take 10 Rohypnol. And I'm not, this is what was happening, this is a fact. You wake up and take 10 Rohypnol. You're not tired. It's not going to knock you out, but you're off kilter, you know? And you're like that then. But it was just, you're just zombied for the day.
Were you in a constant state of just not knowing what the fuck
was
going on?
It's just a constant state of numbness. You don't feel anything. I would have been very low confidence, low self-esteem, insecure, all these things. And when I started taking tranquilizers like that, I didn't feel any of that. So it was just a self-medication. That's all it was. And it got out of hand. And then when I was drinking alcohol on top of the tablets, blackout, erratic behaviour, arrested. And that's kind of when the trouble started.
And like, to get your hands on these drugs, like it was, there's obviously some sort of a local dealer or something like that, I imagine.
The GP.
Like, yeah. Like you go down to the GP saying like, fucking, I hate painting, man. You're making me something there.
The story was with the GP. My friend's brother used to know, this is what you can say to get the tablets. So I went down when I was 17. I gave him a bogey day at the birth because you have to be 18. Said, I'm just out of prison. And when I was in prison, I was on 3 Valium, 2 Rohypnol and 4 painkillers, codeine tablets. I thought, no, I was going to be ran out the door as scrawny 17 year old with a high pitched voice. Got the monthly script, about 200 tablets.
Fuck.
What? At 17.
It was that easy.
Jesus.
It was that easy. And then I started trying other doctors in Cork, and I used to travel to Whittenbred of Cork City and County on the bus, getting prescriptions off doctors, cashing them and taking them, selling them, and that was kind of my life then.
And how did you first end up getting in trouble with the guards then in prison?
Because when I was taking the tablets, you know, you're zombied. When you mix alcohol, I don't know if you've ever taken a Valium or anything like that. You know, some people will take Valium when if they're afraid of flying and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But if you have a drink, like, you're just going to fucking flatten yourself. You don't mix Valium or Rohypnol with alcohol. You know, Rohypnol is traditionally known as the date rape drug. So if we're mixing alcohol with that, you just become very erratic. Robbing cars and lots of criminal damage, antisocial behaviour. A lot of the time, then you're waking up and you've no recollection of what's after happening. Yeah. And you could have a stack of charge sheets, public order, car theft, that type of stuff.
Oh, when you're robbing a car, like you mentioned there, like you're obviously so over your head or whatever, you're just like, I'll just rob it for the crack. It's not like you're robbing it going like, I'll rob this and sell it and I'll make a few pounds. Like, oh, you know what I mean? It wasn't it wasn't criminal as such. It was more like a bit of fucking...
I never classed myself as a criminal.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I was never making money out of anything I'd done. It was, when I was younger, it was for the crack. And when I was older, it was to get crack.
We were reading about, you said the first time that you went to prison was for, you were caught at a concert.
You'd be 40 down in Mill Street. I had a quarter of hash in my pocket. And there was a lot of UB40 tends to bring in an ugly crowd, like, you know,
so. They'd be fairly mellow, yeah.
So there was a lot of detectives, plainclothes guards, you know, in there, yeah. You know, and I was out of my head on the day, like, so I got arrested. I didn't get arrested. I got searched, brought into a room, searched, a lump of hash on me. So I got a fine for that I didn't pay. So that was in 2004. I was 18, and then I had to go into court prison just for a couple of days. Because it was 5 days, I had to do 5 days for not paying the fine, you know.
How much is the fine?
About €300 or something.
And
but you know what? When I was that age, I was looking forward to going to prison.
That's why?
Because that was where I had family members that had been there, my friends had been there, people in my area. It was common. It was like a rites of passage.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I was in there, you know, it was like something that us young fellas at the time aspire to be there. It's a mad context.
Was it manly? Like,
yeah. But I was afraid of my life, no, going in as well at the same time. You know? Yeah. It's like, oh my God, you know. But at the same time, I was excited. All that is kind of going on, you know.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's mad. Like that, the negative mentality I had and my parents had at the time. You know, that's what we aspire to be, whereas other people was looking to get leaving Sir Pints and all this, and all this.
Because, like, when we were thinking of it today, like, when we were chatting just before you came, we were like, "Just surely it'd be fucking easier to pay the fine." Like, but now that you put it that way, like,
we didn't care.
Yeah.
Like, prison was not a deterrent then after that, you know. Once the initial went in the door, seeing what it was about, wasn't that bad. A lot of fellas from my area was in one landing.
It's like a fucking youth club.
Yeah, exactly. But it was like, if you're looking at the poorest and most marginalised, most socially excluded groups in Cork, they were based in the landings. There was travellers, Nigerians, Polish, people from my estate, people from another council estate down the road. That's what was in there. Fellas from Ballybeg and Waterford, traditionally poor estates, some travellers in Tralee. That was who, it was all poor people. That was what was in there.
But James, did you enjoy prison?
I did, yeah. Especially as I got older. Do you know, when I started using heroin, life became really shit, you know. There was no crack and no buzz in that anymore, you know, very isolated. And then at that time, prison was like respite for me, and I felt more freer in prison than I did on the outside, because on the outside I was tied to a chemist for methadone or a dealer or doctors or whatever. I'd no friends, I'd no social life. But when I went in there, I was going to the gym in the morning, I was going to school, I was playing soccer, I had my family on the phone.
Yeah.
They weren't worried about me, I wasn't worried about where I was going to sleep or where I was going to eat. And I was just so happy and content in that, which is a very sad thing to imagine.
Prison. It took that, yeah.
Yeah, because when I got out, it was like, what was I getting out of? I had this identity then of being a drug user, and it was like, that's all I was and that's all I thought I ever meant to be, you know?
Were you still using drugs in prison?
Very seldom, very seldom. Feast or a famine, mainly famine. Yeah. Sometimes, you know,
someone would get something in.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
you might have a party for 1-2 days. But generally, no, I was sober in there. But do you know what? I didn't want, I was happy without drugs in there. Because I had nothing. It's hard to explain, but the insecurities, the fears, and all these issues I had in the house, I didn't have in there.
You weren't worried about anything,
I wasn't, you know, it's mad.
And all the times that you came out of prison and stuff like that, we never attempted to be like, right, fuck it now, I'll go on the straight and narrow, like, you know,
I was fed up with drugs at a very young time, at a very young age, and I would engage with services of certain charities would come into the prison, you know. And I'd meet with them and they'd be care plans and I'd say, you're getting out now, James, on Monday. When you get out now, we'll do this, that and the other. And that's all grand and teary. But when you get out them gates, where are you going to sleep? Where are you? Who's your friends? Who's your family? What are you going to do, James? This is the inner dialogue you're having. Where are you going to go, James? Who's going to take you in? Where are you going to live? What are you going to do? Abandon all your friends and your family? Who's going to give you a job? It's very easy to just go back to what you know, as bad as it is. But rather than going to the unknown.
They are general fears. Like, you know, if you're getting out and you don't know where you're going to sleep that night, and if you are going back to your friends, then, like, was that group of friends the same group that were probably on drugs?
Exactly, then? Exactly. Plus, it's your identity. It's who you are. And to give up your identity and who you are and your peers and your family, for what? For the unknown?
Yeah.
It's a very hard thing to do.
Did you feel that, like, if you had, you know, gotten clean, would you have been kind of turning your back on all those lads you grew up with? Like,
eventually, when I did get sober, when I went to recovery this time around,
yeah,
I did have that conflict inside me. I felt like I was abandoning people. I felt like, who do you think you are, James? You think you're better than everybody else? And but I knew at that stage, like, I was no good to them in addiction, you know what I mean? Even if I'd moved to the other side of the city, to the south side, the quieter part, for a period of time, I stayed away from that area and certain people. But I had to. Because I would have been killed stone dead up there.
You mentioned using heroin and stuff like that, and was that the point where you kind of spiralled out of control and, like, hit rock bottom, and was that the turning point as such?
Yeah, I smoked heroin, and heroin, you kind of smoke it at the start. I smoked on tinfoil for a few years, and I was kind of able to survive on that, you know. I was in a relationship, and I, you know, called to my families, but it escalated then, you know, and I started using needles, and then I remember being with partners and, you know, afraid to be intimate because of my parents, and I had sore arms and couldn't be around family, couldn't wear T-shirts. Just became really deteriorated physically, you know, very thin.
How did you look?
Shocking. Like, if you look at, if you think of a stereotypical heroin addict, that's how he looked, kind of pale yellow skin, very gaunt looking,
thin,
looking down at the floor, hunched shoulders, hood up, no self esteem, no self worth. That was who I was.
And how did people treat you?
I isolated myself away, because I know, like, when you think about a heroin addict, or the way we look at heroin addicts in society is like the lowest of the low, you know. Like, we can tolerate somebody that's using coke in the jacks of the pub.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's nearly normal.
Yeah,
in a bad way. Like,
yeah, exactly. But heroin is a stigma. There's a huge stigma, and when you're using it, you feel it. You know that you're the worst of the worst. You feel dirty. You feel worthless, and you just stay away from people.
Like, if you walked into a shop, the security guard probably would have followed you around.
Well, normally with good merit.
Yeah. and so, fucking hell, at that stage, like, trying to survive, you're probably robbing, and you were sleeping rough, or?
I was sleeping rough then towards the end, yeah.
Where do you sleep, or how do you?
I was sleeping in my mum's garden shed on a deck chair for a while.
Did she know you were there?
No. And I'd hear them. No, you can imagine what it's like. I could hear them going to school and work the next morning, and, you know, just being so close to them, but being so far at the same time.
Yeah, jeez.
And I remember I slept on the street.
In doorways?
Oh,
man, that's got to be traumatic. Like.
Yeah, I done a lot of sleeping then on people's couches, and I would have manipulated people as well to, if I had drugs, I called your gaff, and then you let me stay on your gaff, and my drugs are gone, and then I go and get drugs, and I go to somebody else. That's kind of the way it was. A very insecure existence, a very precarious existence. A lot of hunger as well, you might think, but you're fucking hungry all the time. If you're starving and you find €50, you're not buying food, like.
You're
buying drugs, Christ. And then you're just so hungry. It's just it's a horrible existence. There's nothing glamorous about it.
When did you decide to make the change then? What clicked, or, you know?
I tried to get sober a few times, but I just suppose I just wasn't ready, and I would always, it just, like what I was talking about a while ago, the thought of giving up who I was and everything to do what, it was just, I couldn't imagine my life, I couldn't imagine being something different.
Yeah.
And you know, when you have low confidence and low self-esteem and low self-worth, it's very hard to imagine you're doing something different, you know? But eventually, I was after, I had an overdose, and two guards found me. And
where were you?
Down Blarney Street, just off Cork City.
In a doorway, or?
No, I was down a laneway. It's like, I don't know if you know the Mercy Hospital in Cork City, across the bridge up in between Sunday as well and Blarney Street. It's like a laneway, that links two small streets. 2 a.m, you don't get many people walking up there. You know, midweek, like, and somebody walked past, and I was panned out on the floor. You know, I was after OD'ing and heroin at the time, and two guards and two paramedics came along, and them two guards said to me, "Look, James, we know you a long time, and this is a new law for you. You're going to be found dead. You're lucky that somebody just walked past there, but what if they didn't?" And I come away from there. Norman Aguirre has been compassionate and kind to you towards you can't ignore it, because you don't generally have them interactions with girls in the lifestyle I was living. So I found it hard to ignore it. But I, at that stage in my life anyway, I was very lonely. I was very depressed. I wanted to die. But there was a small part of me that wanted out of it as well, or that felt that if I had the chance, I felt I had some potential to do with my life if I could just... you know, get it.
A bit of inner self-belief, I suppose.
Yeah, a tiny bit, you know. And that guard, I suppose, on that day. And there was multiple interventions. The seed was planted by a lot of people along the way, too. And I suppose after that interaction, then I was like, no, man. I rang Merchants Kierland, the charity in Dublin. I said, look, I'm fucked. I'm on death's door. What can I do to get sorted? And I got into a treatment centre then a few months later. Yeah.
And then when you come out of the treatment centre...
I was homeless again.
Yeah, your
face... I was coming to the end of that. I was coming to the end of treatment and I was like, where am I going to go? You know, I burnt all my bridges with my family. And even though I was back in contact with them at that stage, I still couldn't, you know, just go back to their door because I'd fucked up a lot of times. I didn't even trust myself at this stage. Yeah. But I felt I was a little bit different, you know. I was mature and I was when I was 28 at this stage, you know. And I rang Simon Community in Cork. I said, look, I'm coming to the end of my treatment. I've nowhere to go. And they said... we just have a sober house that they recently opened up, which was a house in a nice estate in the south side, and there was three people in it, and there was one bed left, and I got into that, four fellas in early recovery. So timing was great for me.
Yeah.
I was haunted, like, really. And I got out there for a year, had a key worker supporting me, going to a lot of NANA meetings, aftercare groups, got a little bit of a job on a CE scheme, and I suppose a year under my belt then, become more confident, met a good woman, and she's encouraged me to go to UCC. I went to UCC, and
because I'd imagine getting a job has got to be a barrier when you, if you come out of, like, you know, you would have had a record.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd
hard to get hired.
Exactly, and I'd fuck all of a CV. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'd my name and address on my CV.
you just had those 400 painters that you'd worked with.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You couldn't exactly go back and ask them for a reference either.
Could try harder. Yeah. But,
Simon Community gave me a job on a CE scheme, cleaning one of their administration buildings.
Yeah.
So
you just stuck at that for a while?
I done that for a year and I got a lot of training in there, and it just helped build my confidence, because I'd have, if there's in there, there's accountants, the CEOs and all the fundraisers and everything.
Yeah.
And I was chatting to them like this now, you know, and then I began to think, you know, I could actually do much better than what I'm doing here. And they used to say to me, James, you have a lot of potential. You shouldn't be doing this at all. You could do better things. And I slowly started to become more confident. And then when I met my wife now, Gillian, she was like, you should definitely go to college, you know, you'll be well able and all this. You might get a job in youth work or helping other drug addicts or something like that. And I said, fuck it, you know, that sounded like what I should be doing, you know. So that's how I ended up going to UCC.
And what course did you do?
I did a youth and community work bachelor's degree for 3 years, and then I did a master's in criminology. And I'm starting a PhD there now in a couple of weeks.
That's
some going.
That's unbelievable.
I know, it's mad. I'd be pinching myself, lads, to be honest.
And do you think you reaching out for help yourself was what made the difference? Like, I mean, I know people from where I'm from that, like, some people in their family were heroin addicts or stuff like that, but it always seemed to be the family dragging them to get treatment. Like, whereas, like, with you, it was kind of like yourself. You reached out, you asked for help.
I went to treatment in Tullow, County Carlow. I had to get a fucking 4-day camel ride from Cork.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know what I mean?
A pilgrimage.
Yeah, there's no easy way to get there. But I got there twice. I got there for my assessment and I got there for my admission on my own. You know, and my uncle Pat, taxi driver in Dublin, he helped me out. But I made the phone call myself. I made it my business to get there. Like, I get a lot of parents contacting me saying, oh, my young fella, my young man is this now. How do I get them into recovery? You will never get somebody into recovery unless they want to go to recovery.
Yeah.
But that's, like, a parent doesn't want to hear that.
No,
you know?
Because it's very disempowering.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is.
They don't want to give up either.
Exactly. But, like, you can never, you can't get Johnny to do what you want him to do unless Johnny wants to do it. Do you know what I mean? And my mother tried to change me, but until I wanted to change, it's not going to happen. And it's just a very frustrating place to be for a parent.
What do you say to that parent then? You can't just say, I should look let him off. Like,
well, the way I'd say it is, if you have a child like that, let's say a child, we say between 18 and 24, right? He's a young person, right? And he's carrying on like that and he's bringing trouble around the door. You have to get him out of the house because he'll destroy whatever is left in the family. he'll break up marriages and he'll destroy the other siblings in the house. There'll be nothing but drug dealers and police around the door. You're not abandoning him, but you're not going to facilitate the drugs either. You're not going to enable him to live. He has to have some consequences from his life. And I'd say, if my mum never kicked me out, I could be at home this minute, smoking hash up in my room, playing Xbox, and never done nothing with my life. Yeah. It was until I had real consequences and I was met with a stage in my life where it was either take ownership of this now, James, and seek help, or continue to do what you're doing. But I know people that the mothers never, they never had consequences, and they're still doing the same thing at the age of 30, 40 and 50.
Yeah. And tough love, is it? Or
tough love. It's tough love, but it's just about, I will help you. I'll do anything to help you. I'll do anything to help you when you want it. Mm. When you want help, I'll remortgage the house in the morning to put you through treatment about that.
Yeah. Jeez, it's hard to sit back and...
It's so hard.
And watch it though, yeah.
It's shocking hard. Very hard.
If you were Taoiseach in the morning...
Yeah.
And, you know, the area you come from, you said, like, a lot of troubled heads there. What's the first thing you would do to help Knocknaheeny or to help...
Or what did it need? You know what I mean? Like, what... Like
You've been there. Like, yeah, what...
Yeah. In terms of young people or parents?
I guess it's young people, like, to stop them going down the road that you went down and stuff like that. Like, because where I come from, there was a heroin problem. Not in major, but, like, I remember hearing it a good few years ago. And, like, obviously, it's been eradicated now. It seems great back home. But, like, I think they were saying there's nothing for young people to do or stuff like that. That was what we were hearing commonly, like. But then... Yeah. 98% of us were grand, like, you know. Yeah, so I don't know what they need.
What would you like to see done? Yeah,
I suppose I'd like to see investment in facilities, in sports facilities, like in Knocknaheeny, where I'm from. There is no playground for the children. There is none.
Still,
there is none. No, they had one. It was burnt down. The rubber mats.
Yeah.
If it can be ignited, it will be lit on fire. That's but it's not fair on the 98% of the children want to play. Do you know what I mean? It's not fair, but you have to find a way to have a playground and have it protected. Do you know the soccer pitch? They're Knocknaheeny Celtic. They were in the third division. They were in the lowest tier of AUL in junior soccer. Mm. They rose through the ranks, won every trophy, won the Premier League, and they had the worst facilities you could imagine. No water, no toilet. Jeez. They were playing in the FAI Junior Cup against some Tipperary teams, actually. They had to move to Munster Senior League place to do it, you know what I mean? Because they didn't have the facilities.
Yeah.
You could go around the corner, literally around the corner, and there's showers, and there's floodlights, and toilets, and everything. And up in Knocknaheeny, you've nothing like that.
Yeah.
And again, they had a little porta cabin that was lit up in flames.
Jeez, oh man, that's local lads doing it, is it?
Local lads doing it.
But then more than facilities, like...
In terms of facilities, then it supports around the family. It supports around if a young person is in school and that young person is misbehaving, or if the young person is in Harlan and the young person is starting to drop out, to get the intervention in there, get the supports around the family. Don't penalise the mother. Like, you don't know, if your young person isn't going to school, the mother can be brought to court.
Yeah.
Like, that's madness. Like, that mother doesn't need to go to prison. That mother needs support in the home.
Yeah. You know? I'm sure she wants him to go to school. Yeah,
exactly, a lot of the time, but sometimes the young fellas are just off their games. there's no easy answer, but the way I see it is, like, I was talking to Philly McMahon recently. He was telling me, you know, in Orberstown, the youth detention centre, 340 grand a year to keep somebody in there.
Jesus Christ.
340 grand for 1 year for a young person in there. If you were a fraction of the money spent in the community in terms of the supports, you know, I remember when I was a young person in school, like, there would have been a lot going on in my personal life at the time, and I would have acted out in school, you know, misbehaving, blah, blah, blah. I was just trying out the door, you know. I was given letters, go home, suspended, and all these things.
Yeah.
What I needed was support. Like, I needed to be called up to the mother, you know, what's going on for James, how can we help, blah, 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 and not throw him out of the class because...
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. So it's just targeting the vulnerable and the hardest children. They're not to be excluded. They're the people that need the most support.
Like that first day that you said you got caught with an odd hash in your pocket at a concert, didn't pay a fine, ended up going to prison. That obviously wasn't the right way to deal with you.
But like, if somebody smokes hash, should they go to prison? Like, it's fucking ridiculous, really.
Yeah.
Like if you're smoking weed or, and I don't smoke weed, I don't drink or do any drugs today. But you know, if you can make an argument for the fella having a double vodka and Red Bull, how can you make an argument against the fella having a joint?
Yeah.
The fella against that, the fella having the double vodka and Red Bull is going to cause some damage in a minute. The fella with the joint is not going to cause any damage.
Yeah. Well, like if you had a son and he was 18 or whatever, and you found him smoking weed.
Yeah.
What would you say or how would you feel?
I would educate him on it. I would educate them on it the same way as I'd educate them on alcohol. You have to, like young people aren't stupid. You have to give them the pros and the cons, do a fucking PowerPoint or something. You know? If you smoke this, this is what could happen. You're going to feel happy. You might feel hungry. You might have a bit of a laugh. The cons of it, you might have an underlying mental health issue that you might have never heard of. But it might surface. You might get paranoia. You might kill your motivation. You mightn't do anything. You mightn't want to do anything for the day. And then leave the young fella make an informed decision on that. Because you tell the young fella, don't do drugs. That's not how it works, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same with alcohol. If you have kids, I don't know if you have kids. But
none that we know of, anyway.
There's three of us. But if you've a friend or a teenager or whatever, 16, 17, starting to drink, you're not going to say, do you know what? No, Johnny, don't drink and box that off.
Yeah.
You're going to go drinking. Do you know what I mean? So you're going to say, right, Johnny, we won't drink the whiskey, no. If I'm going to have a drink, have a bottle of blood, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just you have to educate them because they're going to do it.
Yeah. No, 100%. That was the thing. Like, I think me and Johnny as well, like, we're probably guilty of, like, glorifying the drink a bit. You know, the crack in the drink a bit. Like, whereas, like, we'd be like, ah, fucking drugs, you know. Like, whereas there probably is education, but even for us as well, like, you know what I mean?
But, like, cocaine is a huge issue. Like in the GAA community, rugby, soccer, across all strata in society, cocaine use is normalised at this stage.
Oh, geez,
people think that it's fine. It's a harmless drug. It's a high class drug. It's only white powder. The damage has been done in families from cocaine is unbelievable. But it's unspoken. It's not spoken about. You know, there's marriages being broken up. There's mortgages not being paid. There's jobs being lost. There's abuse happening in the home. There's mental health, physical. All this stuff is happening through cocaine.
Yeah.
But it's a very accepted drug and it's happening in every town in Ireland.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah, we were only saying that, like when the pubs used to be open, you'd find it easier to pick the lads who weren't on it, you know, than we're on it.
And look, there's nothing wrong with the pint either. And there's nothing wrong with having the crack and all that. If you're able to do it, fair play to you. But you know, with young people, you just have to give them an education and let them make an informed decision based on that.
And you don't drink at all anymore?
No. I can't drink. I'm grand. I'm not violent and I'm drunk now, don't get me wrong. I like to have a drink and have a sing song and all that.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're going home, I'm not going home.
Okay.
You're only getting going.
Yeah, like my dad used to say to me, why can't you just come out and have a pint? Like, I could go, my dad there and my brother on a Friday evening after work, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to work Monday morning and I'm only coming home.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't stop. So I just said, you know what? Since I gave up the drink, and I said when I come into recovery, you know, at the start, we give it a year now, and you know, if I'm okay, I might have a pint. But everything I've done in my life since, do you know what I mean? Why would I risk it for a drink?
Yeah.
Happy without it, anyway.
And things are flying for you now. As you said there, you're doing your PhD in college. You've got your own podcast.
Yeah.
The Two Norris podcast.
Small bit of inspiration.
Yeah, it's a good name. It's a good name.
Where did you get the name, then?
The North Side. We're from the North Side, Cork City. Mm. So Norris, we've been known as Norris. And fun name, fun logo, but kind of serious enough.
Yeah.
But we try to have a bit of crack too.
So what's the future for yourself?
I don't have a fucking clue. There was never a master plan. It was always, I wanted to get a qualification where I could get a stable job. I've done that now, and I have a stable job.
Are you working as well as studying?
I'm working the Cork Education and Training Board. I'm a public servant. We fund youth services in Cork. So I have that, right? And everything I'm doing now, the PhD, the podcast, and all this stuff, I suppose trying to look for different projects and set new goals. And
so you've come full circle. You were saying there the kids who need help and the people who need help, you know, and weren't given it, now you're the person giving the help.
I know, that's the thing with the podcast. And when I was on the Tommy, a lot of people come to me. Like, I'm in recovery. I've been through the mill. I'm in recovery now, but I'm not a counsellor. I'm not an expert. I can only say what's worked for me.
Yeah.
But some, I know people, they go to church and they never took a drug after they start to go to church, and fair play to him if that's what he does, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or people go to AA or people go to counselling. I can only say it works for me, but I get a lot of people contacting me, looking for me for to give a piece of advice that's going to fix things. It's not. It's a very complex situation, and all I can do is kind of highlight supports in that person's locality. Mm. But I'm not an expert for helping people either, like, you know. So,
well, you know a lot more than us, I'll tell you.
And that's an unbelievable story. And if people want to check you out, they can see the Two Norries podcast on all the podcast apps and
exactly,
all that.
Exactly.
That's inspirational stuff.
Nothing like the Young Offenders.
No. Nothing at all like the Young Offenders, no. Although, you know, I have a good idea for Series 4 for them.
Well,
come on, the Two Norries podcast. Atone for your sins and make amends.
Have it out with two proper Norries, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Thanks a million, Jim.
Not a bother, lads.
If you'd like to hear more about James's story and other stories of recovery from addiction, check out the Two Norries podcast. Very good name, we must say, and it's available on all the usual podcast platforms. After a junior match, I once saw Paddy Fong eat 7,000 chicken nuggets. Now that's a champion. That is a direct quote from this man, the one and only Noel Furlong, because it's time for Noel's News.
Noel's News! It's Noel's News!
Maureen, you just couldn't stay away.
Did you miss me, Noel?
Oh, big time. I may as well be looking at a ditch of nettles here beside me.
Thanks very much for that.
Good to have some flowers back in the garden. I went into the pub during the week.
Well.
And you know, you have to. I ate my first ever pizza.
Well.
I was gasping. Gasping after. Salt. Gasping.
Salt.
I had to scull 14 pints of Harper. I hit the priest with a shovel.
Oi.
Took 9 men to restrain me. That is the last time I eat pizza. Gasp.
It had nothing got to do with it, with the harp.
A little. Gasp, that's a fact. Pizza. Never again. Updates. Under 10 training. Going well. I have to. The young lads, don't be tuned in. The young lads were talking to each other about Fortnite. I said, lads, we were semi-final at the weekend. Never mind what you're going to do in a fortnight. I'm trying to get them ready for a South Final. The boys think they're playing a fucking All Ireland. They're not switched on at all. I said, I have a new warm-up for you. I have a new warm-up. Right. When I shout one, they jog on the spot.
Okay.
You'll never win a county if you can't jog on the spot.
Right.
I heard Christy Ring say once, he put his success down to all the jogging on the spot he did. 8 All Irelands. Man, don't lie.
Jogging on the spot.
2. When I shout 2, you touch your toes. You can't touch the Liam McCarthy if you can't touch your toes. Right? Obviously, Cake O'Brien can't even see his toes. His grandson is playing.
Well.
The Bun. Well, he's like a keg on wheels. He's a butt.
Is he?
He's an absolute butt. But by God, he's a fair young fella.
Is he?
Now he have to wear a man's jersey. But when he gets that ball in his hand, wallop. He might fall over. But if he gets back up, wallop. Bun on the run. When I shout 3, listen to me. When I shout 3, they all have to shout, RF, you're a disgrace. When I blow the whistle, they have to run as fast as they can. And when I fire a shot out of the shotgun, they run even faster. See, they weren't tuned in enough at the start of training. I said, I'll tune in like TV3. Now, I don't paint it at the children.
Oh, well, no, well, that's good to know.
Just generally down towards the soccer field. Who have mysteriously developed a leak in their stand. Giant magpies, I reckon. Unlock your windows. But someone asked me then, oh, Noel, I heard you're amalgamated. The club. We are not. Yeah, but with fucking Poland. There's a heap of Polish young lads playing.
Is there?
I like them.
Do you?
They have no concept of what is and is not a foul. And I tell you, they're not going to learn off me. Now, are you ready?
Yes, please.
New segment, right?
Oh, yes.
Hi, my name is Donna what? Donna who? Chicka chicka, Donna who hardware. Harvest sale, now on. All the shit we thought we'd sell during the summer, and Dennis don't want to be looking at it in the store. Garden furniture, you can have it. we don't want it. It's only dirt anyway. Plastic from China. Grass seeds, you may as well shove them up your hole. Summer is gone. Don't know what? Don't know who? Don't know who hardware. Sheets of clear perspex. Every business needs them because of the corona. So we are charging an arm and a leg. Here at Donahue's Hardware, we like to say, fuck you. We don't want fine day Sunday shoppers browsing for a new patio. In fact, we close on Sundays. If you're a building man with paint on your pants, a pencil behind your ear, and a letter from the revenue, we want you. Hardware for hard men. Special offer. 1-inch nails. 2-inch nails. 3-inch nails. 4-inch nails. 5-inch nails. If you need anything bigger than that, you'll want to be taking a look at yourself. Drive it at O'Donoghue's Hardware. Special offer on 5-inch nails. Have you got hard-to-reach places inside your combine harvester? Small children, now on sale. Under 12s, half price. Get them before they go back to school. Is the speed limit too low on your road? New metallic paint in red, white and black. All the colours of your signs. Delivery to your door by our skilled delivery driver, Paddy Fong. If you order on a Monday, it should be with you by Christmas. Do not give Paddy Fong cash. He will drink it. Your man has had more jobs than Oliver Twist. Paddy Fong, he mixed the cement on the Berlin Wall. Fact. That's a fact.
Is it?
Yeah, nice job. O'Donoghue's Hardware, your number one supplier of bags of lime. In case you need to bury a dog. That's it. I have an ad. I made money.
How much did you get for that? You know, we're owed a commission on that.
Yeah, you're owed a fucking hiding at this stage. No, I'll tell you
that. We have to get our cut. That's how it works.
Yeah, well, call out to the house there and we'll have a chat about it.
I'll leave it off. Boom, chicken, chicken.
Maureen, also, if you want to call out to the house some evening, we'll have a sit down.
Cheers, Noel.
I checked the book. It's a diary.
You know the drill at this stage. Evacuate the mother if you're listening to this next segment. Maureen, what is your mystery topic? You've got your own like parental guidance. Like this is basically telling you to get your parent out of the room.
Annie, you might want to leave the room at this stage because
sure,
I have a question. Now, it's to both of you. Would you sign a prenup? And what would you want in your prenup if you were going to sign a prenup?
Everything. Absolutely yes.
Can I give you some examples of why you want to might? Well, prenups don't always work that well. Like in Ireland, they have no legal standing. It's like you can sign one, but the judge can go, yeah, we have to make provision for both parties.
I was just about to jump in at the start and say, I know for a fact prenups aren't legally binding in Ireland. And then I was like, I better not, you know, just in case, just in case Annie thinks I've actually researched that. I just know that from something completely different. Yeah. It was in a film once, right? On Glen Roar or something. I don't know.
Sure. Okay. So, you know Dr. Dre?
Yeah.
He's married to, was married to Nicole Young for 26 years. So when they got together, he was relatively rich. Now he's worth $800 million.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So they split up today.
Yeah, she filed for divorce for him in June. And she's saying that the prenup is not is null and void because she said Andre, his real name is Andre. She said, Andre acknowledged to me that he felt ashamed. He had pressured me into signing a premarital agreement and he tore up multiple copies of the agreement in front of me. Since that day, he tore up the agreements. We both understood that there was no premarital agreement and it was null and void. So she is now seeking spousal support. Their kids are all adults, so they don't, he don't have to pay... doesn't have to pay maintenance or anything like that. So yeah, he could be soon worth $400 million.
Wow.
Because Jeff Bezos, who Amazon, similar story, he had to give his wife a substantial amount of money. She's now the richest woman in the world.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Just, you know, do you not wish the richest woman in the world was self-made?
Yeah.
Rather than a rich dude's wife, like.
Well, she's kind of self-made. She stuck by him for 26 years. She picked good, you know, and they'd no prenup. So he had to, you know, he had to fork over that.
In an age of where feminism is so, you know, and equal rights and stuff, and which we are a fan of here in the Two Johnnies, you can say equal rights, that is 100%, like, you know.
Go on, John, get to the point. Okay, you're great.
Yeah. Why does the man always have to pay?
No, the woman has to pay as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
okay, when, that's good.
Yeah,
if she was richer.
Oh yeah, yeah. When Jessica Simpson broke up with Nick Lachey, she actually goes into this in her biography as well. She kind of slates him. She kind of tried to offer him $1.5 million. I think she was worth about $27 million at the time. She had to give him substantially more than that. At the end, she just gave him a lot of wealth because she was just like, "I just want you gone."
Okay.
So, and then she went on to make an absolute fortune through her clothing line. So she's made more money through clothes than she ever did at that. So yeah, no, it does. Does work the other way, you know.
But like Jeff Bezos has given her like what?
A billion? Jeff Bezos, his $137 billion fortune is going to be halved because they filed for divorce in Washington State, where the law holds that assets and property are to be divided equally between spouses.
Is he going to have to give her like shares in Amazon?
Well, I don't know if it's been like fully ironed out yet because the marriage only ended in 2019. So yeah. Shit.
Does it matter who's ending the marriage?
It depends. So it depends what's in the prenup, okay? So I'll give you some examples of what ends in the prenup, right? Keith Urban, who's married to Nicole Kidman, he gets $600,000 for every year he's with the couple stay together. So Nicole Kidman's worth $150 million. Yeah. But there's also a clause in it that she doesn't have to give Urban any money if he uses illegal narcotics or drinks to an excessive amount.
Well, what is drinking to an excessive amount?
It seems like a contract we'd have for a...
Yeah. Another rumoured clause in a prenup. Now, this marriage didn't go ahead. It was actually Jessica Simpson and Tony Romo, the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. He wanted, apparently, to add in a lifestyle agreement to their prenup, stating that Jessica Simpson could not be over 135 pounds during their marriage.
What's
no that, what's that
way.
In kg?
That's about, oh, it's what, 9 stone?
Jeez.
Less than that. No, it's not. Yeah, it'd be about 9 stone, yeah. 135 pounds. Neil's going to do that. Put that into
Neil's doing the maths.
So, and for every pound that she gained over 135, she would owe Romo $500,000 worth of property. How much is it, Neil?
9.6 stone.
So that's if they got divorced.
Yeah, if they got divorced. But the marriage never went ahead. So,
go away.
Fair play, Jessica. And I would definitely recommend reading her book because, she is her biography. She's really, actually, really interesting. She's like a bit dumb, but you know, she's a sassy lady. I like her style. Jessica Biel has created a clause for Justin Timberlake, Timberlake, stating that she would get $500,000 if he was caught cheating.
Oh,
yeah, that's a fairly, you know. But there's other celebrities that don't go for the prenup.
Where's the trust?
Yeah,
where's the trust?
Justin Bieber and Hailey Baldwin. So he's worth what? Bazillions.
Half money, yeah.
Yeah, so she, yeah.
What's their crack?
Well, they've no prenup. They're still together. They're only married a year now. I wouldn't push I wouldn't be betting the mortgage on that marriage lasting now, but, you know, maybe it's true love. When Katy Perry and Russell Brand got divorced, they didn't have a prenup, but Russell Brand actually just waived any claim. He was like, I'm not trying to claim any of your wealth. And
it's probably the decent thing to do, isn't it?
It is, yeah, yeah.
Especially he wasn't stuck anyway.
Yeah, yeah. He's fairly minted anyway, Russell, I would imagine.
Yeah. Do you want to know how much Guy Ritchie got to when he divorced Madonna?
Oh, fucking hell.
Give a guess.
100 million.
60 million US dollars.
Jesus.
Yeah, now that was in assets, so yeah, nice money, you know. But again, they didn't have a prenup.
Was that any film
stars? So. Yeah.
Yes, lad, I nearly married Madonna myself.
Need the intern over there, boy. Fuck. He'll be set for life. So, you won't be an intern, lad. You know, if you marry rich.
Yeah. Now, just
and
so,
learn to love.
Yeah. Just so you know what the Irish situation is, like, prenups don't currently have legal standing. The government is waiting to hear from the Law Reform Commission, who are set to make recommendations, but that doesn't look like it's going to be happening until 2021. So prenups could be coming down the road in Ireland, but
would you be in favour?
Yeah, I would, yeah. Especially when it comes to the family farm. Like, okay, you know,
yes.
Yeah. So I would think that, look, at whatever you start off with at the beginning of the marriage, you take with you. And, you know, the kids have to be looked after as well. So, but, you know, I think everybody should have a plan B, because you never know what's going to happen down the line.
Where's the love, Mauro? Where's the magic?
Where is the, you know, reality? Ah. You know? So, you don't know. You might get, like, 20 years down the line, he puts on a bit of weight. Maybe gets impotent. You. You're looking for the rattle, you know?
Oh my God.
You know,
you're looking to the sideline, waiting for a young fella to come on and finish the job.
Yeah, yeah. Someone's giving that substitution signal.
Liam Sheedy's on the sideline.
Yeah.
The family farm is a tough one, all right? Like, that if somebody marries in and then 10 years later they have kids and there's a divorce, and then, like, the person who married in could be there with the kids, and then the person whose family farm it's been for generations is still working the farm but not living there.
Yeah.
That is awkward. But then what are they supposed to do? Like, what if they don't have the money to get a second house on the go for, you know, her and the kids or whatever?
Yeah.
Here's my advice. Don't mind the prenups. Just take your time before you get married.
Yeah.
Like the Americans in particular, no wonder there's so many prenups and, you know, divorce settlements and the whole lot. They're getting married the whole time.
Yeah.
The whole 90-day fiancé, did you watch this stuff now?
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, married at first sight. These Americans, they can't get married quick enough. Take your time. Make sure they're not, you know, a serial killer or, like, you know, something else. Like, make sure that they're sound before you marry them.
You have to meet her people.
Yeah. And that way, what is it they say, judge?
What?
Never mind.
meet an Indian in his wigwam, too. That was another one I heard.
Yeah, that was what I mean. You know, like, before you're going to devote your whole life to someone and get married, possibly, you know, don't just leap into it and then you end up down the line having to pay them a load of money.
Definitely live together.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, 100%. Live together. Find out all the crack before she's going to take half your money.
I know people getting married who never live together.
Yeah, well, it can happen. Yeah.
Madness.
It can happen, yeah.
You know, you don't know somebody until you live with them, I think.
Yeah, he'd be moving out then fairly quick. No, I would say that I don't.
You want to get a prenup?
No, I don't have anything.
I'm hoping we'll have stuff in the future.
I'd be cleaning any of them. No, I don't believe in them, and they're not legally binding anyway. But
you absolutely believe in them.
Jesus.
Easy knowing the shoes not the other foot.
No, 50-50 or 50-50 and everything, aren't you? You know,
so, like, if we went on to be, like, millionaires, and then, like,
I'd put in someone else's name.
Yeah.
No, I'm only messing.
Yeah, a couple of years down the road, your missus is like, "Hey, Smax, you know, I'm really sick of your shit."
Well, listen, if she hasn't got sick of it by now, yeah, Jesus, you know, Christ, somehow. Yeah.
Found you cross dressing again. Won all that podcast money. Going up to the county, down to the bank, your money, lad. You know?
Yeah,
boom is back.
I'll be signing 95% of the business over to you, Johnny. I can assure you that. No, I don't believe in prenups. Jesus, like, if you're waiting long enough to get married and it's what you want, you should be.
What's your thoughts, Johnny B? You believe in prenups, or?
Holla, we want prenups.
It's really apparent in cases like Jay-Z, where he's worth like, or Dr. Dre, where he's worth hundreds of millions. In Ireland, it's like a house or something, you know?
Yeah.
But like, how the hell did Dr. Dre and Yuan break up after 26 years?
I think she cited irreconcilable differences. So he's a... like, he beat up a woman before, so you wouldn't know. Like, do you remember that it was in...
it was in the film one or something.
They kind of left it out of the film.
They left it out of the film, but it was in... What was the TV series with him and Jimmy Iovine? We loved it.
Oh, that one. I bought the beats after.
It's like The Outliers or something.
Anyway, yeah, the movie
Google
was...
Google it there, Neil.
Yeah, yeah, it's on Netflix.
Straight out of Hollywood. Yeah. The movie, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They airbrushed all the hidings.
No, I would think... Like, look, if you get married anyway and you're going to end up...
The Defiant Ones.
The Defiant Ones, nice. Yeah. Good man, Johnny Bite. Swarfiga.
It's not slander. He said it himself, lads.
And, like, if you do get married and you have kids and stuff like that, you're going to want to support the kids anyway. There's going to have to be some sort of a settlement somewhere. But try and stay away from the prenup. Just marry correctly would be what I'd be saying. You know what I mean?
I bet we're going to get some feedback on this.
Oh, this is we've opened the can of worms, Maureen, once again. You've done it. Thank you.
What if, like, you're, like, the Tommy Guinness, and you like, you own Guinness, and then your daughter brings home this lad. Well, Dad, this is Mick. I'm going to marry him. And you're like, I don't want that prick inheriting him. Mick comes in, like, and he has, do you know what I mean? Smoking roll.
Yeah, he's a craft beer enthusiast.
Doesn't wash himself. She's like, oh, but like, he's really into Bob Dylan and stuff. And you're like, I don't want him sucking us dry, you know?
Yeah. It's an interesting one.
We'll put it out to listeners.
Okay.
Want their feedback. Oh my God, a barrage is going to be coming our way.
I think, yeah, go on, bring him in.
Yeah.
That's just because I'm tight now.
Johnny B loves prenups. Finally, it's Yurt and Dirt time. Don't forget, Yurt and Dirt this week is brought to you by the good people at 48. Woo! Who are changing up mobile.
On 48.
They've just launched a limited time offer for new customers for just €7.99. You can get 100 gigs of data, all calls and texts. And you can check out how to get this incredible offer and also do more with your data, like donate it, swap it, share it and more. Try it out for yourself on 48.ie. You can get your free gigabyte now. Johnny B, your dirt or yurt. You start us off. Surprise me, man.
I got sent a Tang GA jersey.
Yeah, you put the call out now.
I'm wearing it. Thanks very much. T-A-N-G. It's the word that we use to describe countrymen into...
Scanias and...
Yeah, doing up trucks and shooting and rooting and bollocks, and we call them a Tang, and then we found a village called Tang and they sent me a GA jersey. A GA jersey. So
Georgia.
By now, Tang will have won or lost the Westmeath Intermediate County Final.
But we want to say, well done or commiserations.
Yes. Okay, so me dirt. Max was alluding to it before we started recording. Nice headline in, is it RSVP?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Headline reads, Johnny B opens up on love life. And the whole article is about that. Now, they rang us and...
it was promo for the TV show.
It's really the only reason we're doing it. Promo for the TV show. We spoke about the TV show for a good 15, 20 minutes. And then it was like, oh, and, you know, you were on around America, like... any women on, or something like that. And we were like, no, sure, we're both seeing people. All right, where did you meet? It's like, oh, I actually met like DM. And they were like, tell us about her. And I was like, ah, no, she's happy enough to just, you know, let me be shining a spotlight on her. She's happy enough doing her own thing. That was about as much as it was. Back to the TV show. So now they wrote an entire article about that aspect of it. And they did not mention the TV show at all.
Oh, it's bad people.
Yeah, tabloids. What? The stuff we have to put up with.
And they left you out of the article completely, yeah. Smacks.
Not fucking surprised. That's more of it. Yeah. Not
is this it now? Is that it? Are we tabloid material now?
It's amazing. Like,
you're
like,
clickbait, yeah.
Are we?
Yeah. But it's so funny. You do so many interviews and some are really genuine. And then like some are like want to know about a TV show and have watched the show. And then some are like, yeah, you done a TV show. Tell us about it. We're like, yeah, it was great. And then the rest of them are like, yeah, anything else happened. Ah, sure. We're getting back. I'm getting married. You're getting married, are you? Where's that on? Where's it on? Could you tell us what's her name? Where's she from? It's like they only come alive for tabloid stuff.
Yeah. That's what people like to read, you know.
People like to read it, yeah. They want to get an inside scoop on Johnny B, you know.
What would I have to do to get the front page of the Red Tops?
Oh,
you'd have to...
Shag Kate Middleton or something.
Who? Yeah, you'd have to date a Miss Ireland or a former Miss Ireland. I know you're trying, you know.
No, not anymore.
Oh, you tried and failed in the past. Yeah.
Go on, Maura. Give it to him. Allegedly. Fucking you, give it to him. Allegedly. Allegedly. No, you can't sue yourself.
What could I do to get myself on the front page of tabloids? How about a fight?
You scrap, yeah.
Would that do it?
Yeah. No. Tabloids want love, relationship stuff. Or like, yeah. Johnny B opens up about...
I don't want to scrap that. That'll affect me as well. I don't want, you know, my business.
I know that you've like some problem. Like, you know, it's like...
No, it's all
I've
fine.
Always said Johnny B opens up about his OCD problem, you know.
Oh, that wouldn't get in tabloids, would it?
He doesn't have OCD. Okay, listeners of this podcast.
Yeah, do you know?
I'll do
your, it. Joe, your manager, is going to come up with something. I'll give you a call when he hears this. Yeah.
Listen, if there's any man to get you in the front page of the newspaper, it's that man.
I honestly.
Do you want to be in the front of RSVP?
No,
maybe like the Star. Like, so I didn't think we'd be on their radar.
Yeah.
We're just here podcasting away.
Telly changes that.
Do you know how Freddie Starr, his career became big? I think it was...
Sex tape.
No, was it his...
I'll do a sex tape.
His guy ended up in prison, his PR manager. Do you remember the guy with the Max Clifford?
Yes.
He came up with this story. I think I'm remembering this right. He came up with the story that Freddie Starr ate a hamster. Now, Freddie Starr never ate a hamster, but there was a tabloid front of story. It's like, Freddie Starr ate my hamster.
Okay. Johnny B ate my terrier.
It's a bit big.
Yeah, it's a bit big. Maybe a sex tip. We're working on it. We're working on it. We'll get to wheel promo this podcast somehow or another. We'll open it up to the listeners. They can let us know how they want or how they think you can get on the front page of the Star.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to bring this on you, man.
Yeah, no, just wondering, you know, kicking it about.
If anybody cares about my yurts and dirts, my yurt of the week is a mate of me and Johnny's. Well, I know him from home. He's out in New York. And I just think this is just, you know, making the most of a situation. They're into the golf, himself and a couple of buddies. Couldn't go to the golf, obviously, it's behind closed doors. They've rented a house overlooking the third hole at the US Open. And he texted me yesterday and was like, lad, see, are we on the box? Go to the third green. We're having a barbecue out the back. And I was like, I haven't seen him yet on the television, but I just thought that's class. Mickey Maher and the boys out in New York who rented that house, they're my yurt of the week. That is the way to do it. Rent a gaff on just overlook. I don't know how much it costs, but the boys are out barbecuing and drinking bottles. You know,
looking out at the golf.
I have to say, I wouldn't like to go astray on the fairway and just be like, you know, Tiger Woods or someone, one of the big boys, in, you know, in an awkward position. The boys are just going, go on, Tiger, boy, drive it on, lads. Just launching into the hot dog and having a beer. But I think that the boys are class. And that's my yurt. And my dirt is our own club Care are flourishing at the moment in the ladies game.
Yeah.
So our ladies senior footballers are into a county football final, and the Camogie players are into a county Camogie final in junior or junior Camogie.
Junior A, yeah.
Yeah. And going great on both codes. But of course, it's happened again, and it does happen an awful lot with the ladies game in particular. Both county finals are down for next weekend. Camogie on a Saturday, ladies football on a Sunday, and there seems to be no way of resolving it. I don't know if the both associations are to blame, I don't know who's to blame, but I just hope, for the sake of all these girls playing, that they can resolve this, because playing two games in 2 days would not happen at adult men's level. I can assure you that. Like, Loughmore are in both county finals, and that would not be done to them.
Fact.
So I think it's only fair if there's justice across the board. So if anybody wants to send this on to either association, I think it's time we sorted this out. This happens at ladies inter-county level as well. If there's a lot of dual players, girls playing ladies football and Camogie, and this happens all the time, how can those two associations not sort this out better? So I would call on them, sort this
come
out.
Come on.
Sort it out. Two Johnnies are here. We'll broker the deal. No bother. We're here to do it. And that pretty much sums up this week.
Best of luck to the ladies too.
Yeah.
Smax was commenting on the county semi-final.
Not commenting. I was commentating. I wasn't just, you know, throwing in comments from there.
It was amazing. He knew the whole ladies team off by heart. Tomorrow.
There's a surprise.
I didn't even look at the programme.
I knew the other team too.
You knew their Instagrams and all that.
From me, Johnny Smacks.
From me, Johnny B.
From me, Maura.
We'll see you next week. Watch us on the telly Thursday night, 9:30. It's the last episode. Go on over that.
Good luck.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.